The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News.
And good evening. Wall Street today signaled its approval of the tax cuts passed by the Republican-controlled Congress.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Investigators probe a deadly duck boat disaster.
Oh, my God.
It's going under.
The president promising Russian accountability for election meddling.
I let him know we can't have this.
And the Russian woman the U.S. says is a spy.
The Justice Department alleges she took steps to develop relationships with American politicians in order to advance the interests of the Russian Federation.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Let's start this weekend with that duck boat disaster. In Branson, Missouri, the tour boat capsized Thursday evening in a strong storm on a lake, killing 17 people.
Oh, my God.
It's going under.
Passengers on a nearby showboat watched in horror as Table Rock Lake overwhelmed the duck boat, along with 31 people on board.
I need a rope on the bow.
Video from earlier in the day shows rough waters on the lake. Around the time the boat sank, thunderstorms with wind gusts of 63 miles per hour were recorded nearby. The owner of the duck boat company says nothing like this has ever happened in the company's 47-year history.
No, it shouldn't have been in the water.
The duck boat owner says life jackets were on board. Under law, passengers are not required to wear them. Crews say they'll recover the boat from the bottom of the lake.
It landed, I believe, in about 40 foot of water and rolled down into 80 foot of water.
Investigators from the National Transportation Safety Board are now at the scene and will be asking, given the weather conditions, why the boat was out on the water in the first place. Vincent Blandon for CBS News, Branson, Missouri.
The president on Twitter calling it a tragedy and a great loss. Meanwhile, folks are trying to recover and rebuild in Iowa, where dozens of tornadoes swept through Thursday. Power was knocked out for thousands. Allegiant Energy spokesman Justin Foss.
Safety is our main concern. While the weather has passed, the streets are full of debris, full of downed power lines as well. Our crews are cleaning these up.
Back here in Washington, the Trump administration says the president is preparing to host Russia's Vladimir Putin in Washington in the fall. NBC's Andrea Mitchell broke the news to Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats at the Aspen Security Forum Thursday.
We have some breaking news. The White House has announced on Twitter that Vladimir Putin is coming to the White House in the fall.
Say that again.
President Trump's own Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, was clearly shocked to find out the president had invited Putin to Washington for a second meeting.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's going to be special.
Coates said he has no idea what the president and Putin talked about during their one-on-one, which Coates believes should not have been private.
If you'd asked me how that ought to be conducted, I would have suggested a different way.
At the summit, Putin offered the U.S. permission to interview 12 Russians accused of interfering in the 2016 election in exchange for allowing his investigators to question American citizens, including former U.S. ambassador to Moscow, Michael McFaul, and American financier William Broder.
I think that's an incredible offer.
On Thursday, the White House walked back the president's remark, now saying he disagrees with Putin's proposal. Broder, a longtime critic of Putin, says the reversal does not go far enough.
He needs to be much more explicit about how this is never going to happen.
After the White House backtracked on the president's initial remark, the Senate unanimously voted against allowing Russians to interview U.S. officials.
Correspondent Weijia Jiang reporting. The president, of course, was criticized for his press conference Monday alongside Putin, where he cast doubt on assessments by U.S. intel and law enforcement agencies that Russia interfered in the U.S. election. The president said he misspoke and does, in fact, agree with those assessments. But speaking to CBS Face the Nation host Margaret Margaret Brennan, former Secretary of State John Kerry criticized the president.
So you don't buy his walk back?
I don't buy his walk back 1 second. And by the way, how can anyone buy walk back after walk back when you take positions here and then you take positions over here and you're repetitively walking back and changing?
The president promised to hold Putin accountable while speaking to CBS Evening News anchor Jeff Glor.
Do you hold him personally responsible?
Well, I would, because he's in charge of the country, just like I consider myself to be responsible for things that happen in this country. So certainly, as the leader of a country, you would have to hold him responsible, yes.
What'd you say to him?
Very strong on the fact that we can't have meddling, we can't have any of that. Now, look, we're also living in a grown-up world. Will a strong statement, you know, President Obama supposedly made a strong statement, nobody heard it. What they did hear is the statement he made to Putin's very close friend, and that statement was not acceptable. Didn't get very much play, relatively speaking, but that statement was not acceptable. But I let him know we can't have this, we're not going to have it, and that's the way it's going to be. We had a very strong meeting on so many different points. And, you know, and I've said, and I campaigned on it, getting along with Russia and China, by the way, and other countries is a very good thing, not a very bad thing.
A 29-year-old Russian woman is behind bars accused of working with Russian intelligence operatives to influence U.S. politics. More from CBS's Paula Reed.
Butina came here on a student visa in 2016, but the Justice Department alleges she took steps to develop relationships with American politicians in order to advance the interests of the Russian Federation. Photos show her with NRA CEO Wayne LaPierre and Republican Governor Scott Walker. She also tried, unsuccessfully, to arrange a meeting between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. But she did manage to get in a question about sanctions to then-candidate Trump at Freedom Fest in 2015.
Do you want to continue the politics of sanctions?
I believe I would get along very nicely with Putin.
Investigators allege Butina had an ongoing relationship with a 56-year-old political operative strictly for business purposes, and was likely in contact with Russia's FSB intelligence agency throughout her time in the U.S. Eric O'Neill is a former counterintelligence operative with the FBI.
A spy will do whatever they can to get that information. And if they got to sleep with someone to do it, they'll do it.
A Russian foreign ministry spokeswoman says Butina's arrest is just part of an effort to undermine U.S.-Russia relations. The FBI moved in on Butina after it says it saw signs she was preparing to flee the country, including packing up her apartment, telling her landlord her lease was up, and transferring $3,500 to a Russian bank account. Paula Reed, CBS News, Washington.
The Kremlin says the timing of Butina's arrest was meant to throw cold water on positive developments from the president's summit with Putin. We also learned Friday the FBI has seized a recording of a conversation between President Trump and his former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, in which they reportedly discuss payments to a former Playboy model. The Justice Department is investigating Cohen's involvement in paying hush money to women to prevent embarrassing stories about Mr. Trump. Coming up, what's at stake in the Russia investigation?
It doesn't take much for an election system to be thrown into chaos.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Head of the U.S. Central Command, General Joseph Votel, told reporters he's received no specific guidance regarding relations with Russian military in Syria since the president's summit in Helsinki with Putin.
We continue our communication and deconfliction with the Russian Federation commanders to ensure protection of our forces, of our respective forces, and to meet our obligations. But we have received no specific direction at this point.
Meanwhile, international forces are preparing to evacuate the search and rescue group, the White Helmets, from southwest Syria. For the last week, we've been talking about Russia's influence on this country and its political system. Correspondent Jeff Pagase knows all about it. He details it in his new book, Compromat: How Russia Undermined American Democracy. He's here with us in Washington this weekend. Thanks for talking with me, Jeff.
My pleasure, Steve.
Let's start with the president's response to U.S. government findings, intelligence community findings, that Russia meddled in our election. He now is backing those assessments. How obvious from the start has this all been to you?
Well, it's just been bizarre. For some reason, the president has a hard time giving a full-throated endorsement of what the U.S. intelligence community concluded way back in January of 2017. So this is information that he's been briefed on multiple times. But even as he tries to, and the White House tries to walk back his comments at the summit in that press conference with Vladimir Putin, it just seems like there's something holding him back from giving this full-throated endorsement of his intelligence community, and that still puzzles me.
From the Kremlin's perspective, do you think this is mission accomplished, or do you think this is they're on to us and we're worried?
No, I think this is mission accomplished for the Kremlin, and I think it's been mission accomplished for the Kremlin since 2016. And not just as it relates to the White House, or the operations and the decision-making in the White House, but really just the chaos that all of this has caused in the U.S., the divisions that it has stirred up. They have been able to insert themselves with this cyber campaign into domestic affairs here in the U.S., and that's exactly what they wanted.
Do you think Americans who may have been susceptible to this campaign to sow discord in the U.S. by the Russians know they might have been targeted by the Russians, or do they even care?
I think there are a lot of people who don't realize what is happening and what has happened. And that, for me as a reporter and as an American, is the most frustrating part of this, is that there are people who brush this off as no big deal. But, you know, what I try to say in this book is, you know, take your hat off, your Make America Great hat off, or your Republican hat off, or your Democratic hat off, and just look at this issue. This is about our democracy and the sanctity of our vote and our democracy. U.S. officials will say, hey, you know, we have no evidence. And they're careful in how they say this, but they say, we have no evidence that any votes were changed. That's not the point. The point is that if you influence what people see, what people hear, what people read online in their social media, Twitter, Facebook, anywhere else in social media, then obviously you can affect how they vote because you're changing how they think. And that's what this cyber war is. And it is a cyber war. And that's why it is important that people get up to speed in terms of what is involved here. And you've heard U.S. intelligence officials, Dan Coats, the director of the National Intelligence, sounding the alarm. And you've heard others in law enforcement sounding the alarm. But for some reason, the message isn't quite getting through in a unified way.
Do you have a sense we'll know where we stand in the Robert Mueller investigation with the trial of Paul Manafort, the first trial starting in just a few days?
I think we will learn more details from that trial, or the trials involving Paul Manafort. There is more to come. And there are people in intelligence circles who've known about what's to come since 2016. And I don't have all the information, but I did get tips from some of these intelligence sources early on. Tips that still ring true today. You know, back then, as I point out in my book, I had an intelligence source who'd seen some of the data, who said, you know, not only they're hacking us, we're not doing anything about it, but that this is something that's going to lead to a constitutional crisis. But you just look at the ensuing months and how all of this has unfolded. And those words, constitutional crisis, still ring in my head, because I wonder if we're in one now and we just don't know it. And so that's the thing that that's in part what I talk about in this book. But also, how do we protect our election system against these Russian intrusions? Next time, it might not be the Russians. It might be the Russians and some other nation. You know, these smaller nations, they were concerned or are concerned now about smaller nations trying to hack into our systems. Because you can hire, quote, patriotic hackers. They're out there for Bitcoin. You know, so you can hire them to hack into U.S. systems or scramble U.S. voter databases. And imagine what happens if some hacker is able to breach some voter database in, say, a red state or a blue state. So there's confusion when you go to the polls. The lines grow. People start getting frustrated and angry. They turn and leave. Well, that's a form of voter suppression. And there were concerns in 2016 that that was happening. So imagine that kind of scenario. It doesn't take much for an election system to be thrown into chaos. And that's what I talk about in my book, Kompromat.
My colleague Jeff Pegues on the Russia investigation and his new book, Kompromat, How Russia Undermined American Democracy. Always good talking with you, Jeff.
Thanks, Steve.
British investigators have reportedly identified those responsible for the nerve agent attack on a Russian double agent and his daughter earlier this year. That's according to the UK's Press Association. More from CBS News' Anne-Marie Green.
Sergei Skripal and his daughter were poisoned in March in England. They were seriously ill and recovered. British police reportedly suspect that several Russians in the attempted murder after analyzing closed-circuit TV. Russia denies any involvement.
Two other Britons were sickened after being exposed to the same Novichok that's suspected of being used in that attack on the Skripals in Salisbury. One of them later died. Up next, we hear from the boys rescued from that Thai cave.
What was it like in the cave for you?
It was dark and quite scary, Titan said.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Sunday nights, Monday mornings, or Tuesday afternoons. You can listen to 60 Minutes whenever you want with the weekly podcast from CBS News.
How do we know you're telling the truth?
Because I have no reason to lie.
With hard-hitting investigative reports, interviews, and profiles.
Did these documents that you got prove corruption?
Absolutely.
From a variety of CBS News correspondents and contributors.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
For the biggest scoops and the best storytelling, subscribe to the 60 Minutes podcast today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. In Afghanistan, Taliban fighters are launching a fresh wave of attacks while the U.S. reviews its strategy there. Here's CBS's Cammie McCormick at the Pentagon.
Taliban fighters have been attacking Afghan security outposts in the east and south of the country. They've killed a number of Afghan police officers. The uptick in violence comes as the U.S. commander there takes a fresh look at the U.S. war strategy, now about a year old. Commanders and the Trump administration have repeatedly said it's working, but there's a government-wide look at it. The U.S. still has 15,000 troops in Afghanistan.
We're hearing from the boys rescued from that Thai cave. Here's correspondent Anna Werner.
A smile lit up the face of 11-year-old Titan, finally back at home after more than 2 weeks in a cave, now surrounded by family.
What did Dad say to you?
Hola.
He said, "You are safe and home now," Titan told us. "We are so happy."
What was it like in the cave for you?
It was dark and quite scary, Titan said. Scary for his father, Tanawut, too. Earlier this week, he told us now he just wants a normal life for his son. I want to support him, he told us, and I want him to remember whatever happens, he still has family. What helped Titan in the cave? He told us. I had Coach Ake by my side, he said. He encouraged me. At a news conference Wednesday, the boys' 25-year-old soccer coach, nicknamed Ake, described keeping the group calm in the cave.
I said to them, don't be scared.
It would be another 9 days before the boys would be found by British divers.
How many of you? 13. Brilliant.
14-year-old Adun helped the group communicate with their English-speaking rescuers.
Thank you, everybody. Pray.
We visited with Adun Wednesday at the church in Thailand where he has lived for almost 10 years.
He growing up in here.
Gu Shimao is the pastor of the church. He helped teach Adun English.
He is the future leaders of the church in here for the next generation.
One of the first things Adun did when back at the church, eat his favorite food, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
How does it feel to be back?
I'm very happy.
Adun's life has been difficult even before the cave. He is stateless, not a citizen of Thailand or any other country. His parents slipped him out of Myanmar and into Thailand nearly a decade ago to escape ethnic conflicts. They are still in Myanmar. But at the church, Adun is surrounded by people who love him. and he's grateful.
Anna Werner, CBS News, Maesai, Thailand.
A dangerous phenomenon injured tourists off the coast of an erupting volcano in Hawaii. More from CBS News correspondent Carter Evans.
Tourists can be heard screaming in this video that captures the moment a huge explosion of molten rock and ash blasted hundreds of feet into the air, landing on a tour boat called the Hotspot. The Lee family was hit.
We were pelted with the rocks, and like it's embedded in your scalp and everything, and the heat and the steam, you could feel it.
Passengers said one lava bomb was the size of a basketball, smashing right through the metal roof of the boat. Christopher Lee's leg was severely burned when he fell to the deck.
I got covered in really hot rocks, and I stayed there for maybe 2 seconds, and it third-degree burns on my legs.
So you were trying to dodge all the lava that was raining down on the boat?
Yeah, pretty much.
Kilauea has been erupting for more than 2 months, destroying more than 700 homes. The boat operators, Lava Ocean Tours, had a special permit to take tourists within 165 feet of the coastline. But CBS News uncovered three lawsuits in the last 5 years, which accused the company of failing to warn passengers of dangerous conditions known to lava tours and dispensing with any kind of risk assessment when selecting an area to view the volcanic eruption.
The immediate area around the lava flow can be extremely dangerous. That's where we are, and we've got protective gear. This area is off limits to the public. As for those lava tour operators, after Monday's accident, they now have to stay 1,000 feet from shore. Carter Evans, CBS News, Pahoa, Hawaii.
A rash of shark attacks recently along the East Coast, including two near Fire Island off New York's Long Island.
I looked over and I saw like this tannish orange like fin and like body.
Lola Polina was enjoying a family day at the beach when a 12-year-old felt something grab her leg. She started screaming for help.
I see her like in the water, like struggling, and there was this commotion in the water next to her.
It mostly just hurt, but I felt something in there, and then it like let go, and I was like, oh my gosh, what just happened? We looked down, we saw like the bite marks and like the blood.
Her parents brought her to nearby lifeguards who evaluated her wounds and bandaged her leg. She was taken to the hospital for further treatment.
I knew it had to be something like a shark because there's nothing else it could have possibly been, not with those kind of wounds.
Earlier in the morning, and only about 5 miles down the shore, something attacked a 13-year-old boy. Lifeguard Bella Cohen pulled him from the water.
I noticed that he had a lot of blood on his leg, and he said that he felt like something had bit him. I'm just happy that nothing worse happened. I'm okay, and like I'm not gonna, you know, die.
Shark attacks are very rare. An organization that tracks them says last year there were 88 worldwide, resulting in 5 deaths. Don Daler, CBS News, Fire Island, New York.
A huge iceberg moving towards the coast of a small town in Greenland prompted some evacuations. Here's correspondent Mark Phillips from London on the effect climate change is having on that country.
It's huge, it's beautiful, and when the massive iceberg that's grounded off the tiny Greenland fishing port of Inarsuit starts to break up, it's dangerous. The village on Greenland's west coast is home to only 169 people, and more than 30 of them have already been moved to higher ground because when the iceberg calves, when chunks of it fall into the sea, powerful waves surge into the harbor. If the warm weather means the berg breaks up faster or, worst of all, rolls over, the town could be flooded. Greenland's ice is on the move. Denise and David Holland of NYU have spent decades studying Greenland's ice and have never seen anything like it.
Is this an event that we're going to be seeing more and more of?
Warmer air, or perhaps even more important, warmer water, leads to very rapid disintegration of ice. And icebergs are a very unstable structure.
The calving of icebergs off Greenland's glaciers isn't new. The question is whether it's speeding up because the Arctic seas are warming, and what that means. On a trip there several years ago, that it was happening was obvious.
How quickly these icebergs break off the glaciers and how fast they float out to sea and melt will determine how quick sea levels rise across the planet. This isn't theory. These are the real consequences of climate change in handy frozen packets. Mark Phillips, CBS News, London.
Coming up on the weekend roundup, a final salute to the voice of mornings in Vietnam.
Good morning.
Fighting Vietnam.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The CDC has traced a salmonella outbreak to raw turkey. Reporter Sabrina Cupid in Atlanta has the details.
The salmonella has been found in raw turkey products.
Products that people are preparing at home, including ground turkey, turkey pieces, and also whole turkeys.
The CDC's Colin Basler says 90 people have gotten sick in 26 states, 40 people ending up in the hospital. The CDC is not advising you to avoid eating turkey.
We want to make sure people are handling raw turkey carefully and cooking turkey to a temperature of 165 and making sure that they are handling these products as safe as they can.
Sabrina Cupid for CBS News Atlanta.
As more diners shut down in the U.S., IHOP is trying to rebuild its market share on its 60th anniversary. More from correspondent Diane Kinghall.
Nicole Moore has been eating at IHOP since she was a little girl and knows exactly what she wants.
I always have to have pancakes.
Brian Lewis was happy to try something new.
I was excited to try the new burger, to be honest.
IHOP got the world's attention last month with a temporary name change to IHOB, promoting its new burger line.
At first, people were outraged. They were a little bit angry.
Company president Darren Rebelez rang the opening bell at the New York Stock Exchange Tuesday to mark IHOP's 60th anniversary. He called the promotion a success.
Our number one objective was to get people talking about IHOP and about our burgers. And mission accomplished.
The attention was welcome after last year's flat performance. The company's 2017 restaurant sales declined nearly 2%, part of an overall slowdown in casual dining, which is one reason why IHOP is introducing takeout and delivery options popular with younger diners.
This is a battle for market share. And so if we're going to grow our business, we need to take business from our nearest competitors.
On this 60th anniversary, Rebelez is hoping for 60 more.
We're lifelong customers.
And Nicole is hoping for it, too. Diane Kinghall, CBS News, New York.
The U.S. Census Bureau reveals married couples are lying about how much they make. Reporter Chris Miller explains why.
The Census Bureau found that when wives earn more than husbands, both will fib about their income to make it seem like the man is earning more. Couples therapist David Brashear says, yes, the male ego is that fragile.
For many of us, guys identify themselves by what they do.
And the census study found that women will inflate their husbands' incomes even more than their husbands do. So why is that?
Women, for probably thousands of years, have been fluffing us up and telling us how wonderful we are and trying to not hurt our fragile egos.
Chris Miller for CBS News New Orleans.
Amid rising debt, President Trump is blasting the Federal Reserve for raising interest rates. Here's CBS News business reporter Jason Brooks.
The Federal Reserve may be an independent regulator free of political pressure, but it's getting an earful from President Trump. In an interview with CNBC, the president says he's not happy with the Fed's rate increases given all of the work being put into the economy. Acknowledging that some will be concerned with his comments, the president said he's letting the central bank do what it feels best. Trump's comments pressured Treasury yields lower.
The auto industry is calling on President Trump to put the brakes on his plan to slap tariffs of up to 25% on imported vehicles and parts. Here's correspondent Jerika Duncan.
The word tariff is nothing more than a tax.
At this Honda dealership in New York, General Manager Brian Benstock says these days he's warning customers and employees price hikes could be coming.
We're always telling our customers to buy now. Now's a good time. Prices are going to go up, potentially go up. But it's put some fear in the market, and fear is not a good thing.
The proposed 25% tariff on imported cars and auto parts from Europe and elsewhere could give buyers sticker shock. Consumers could be shelling out nearly $7,000 more per vehicle. The Honda Civic could cost an extra $1,100. The Ford Escape up nearly $1,600. And the Audi Q5 could run nearly $6,000 more. And it's not just those shopping for cars. The entire auto sector could take a hit. According to an industry study, the impact of tariffs could have the opposite effect of helping the U.S. car and parts industries. A 25% tariff on automotive and parts imports could lead up to 2 million fewer U.S. vehicle sales and could cost nearly 120,000 auto dealership jobs.
20% of the U.S. economy is based on automobile business, whether that be insurance companies, advertising, banking. Every industry is impacted when we sell less cars.
CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
When we put tariffs on top of an already accelerating inflation rate, it starts to put pressure on the consumer. That's what economists are worried about.
Last year, 44% of U.S. car sales were imported cars. The U.S. Commerce Department will continue to investigate this issue of possibly imposing those new tariffs on foreign cars and auto parts. Jerika Duncan, CBS News, New York.
A community has rallied around a Chicago cop. Correspondent Dean Reynolds explains why.
Chris Kudla has to be strong and in peak condition. He has to because he's a policeman and because he's fighting stage 4 kidney cancer.
I was officially diagnosed November 25th, 2017, the day before my birthday.
Just 8 months after he joined the Riverside, Illinois Police Force, whose chief is Tom Weitzel.
From the first day he came in and met with me and told me about his diagnosis, he told me, "Chief, I'm not stopping working."
And he hasn't. Through all the doctor's appointments and twice a month chemotherapy, he's stayed on the beat.
You must really love police work.
Yes.
I mean, that you're going to continue doing this as long as you can, I guess, right?
Yes. Yes, sir.
But because of his short time with the Riverside Force, he'd earned far fewer sick days than he would need to manage his treatments and keep his job.
My chief's reaction, kind of right off the bat, was, "All right, let's see what we can do to help you out."
What his fellow cops decided to do was donate their sick days to Chris.
How many sick days has he acquired this way?
Yes, he's acquired up to 6 months so far. It's not just going to be police. It's going to be public works, fire, rec department, village administration. If they want to donate, they could.
Everybody, without hesitation, stepped up to help out.
It's pretty extraordinary generosity.
Absolutely.
His prognosis is grim, but his attitude is great.
Sometimes when you start to lose faith in humanity, think that, you know, that this world's gone down the wrong path, there ain't no coming back, you know, then something like this happens.
And what happened here is really something. Dean Reynolds, CBS News, Riverside, Illinois.
The voice of mornings in Vietnam has died.
It was Adrian Cronauer's signature phrase,
"Good morning, Vietnam."
But in a 2009 speech to the American Veterans Conference, he said not all of his fellow servicemen relished that greeting.
And some of the troops would turn to their radios and yell the GI equivalent of, "Get stuffed, Cronauer." And on one occasion, a guy picked up his M16 and blew away his radio.
Cronauer was only in Vietnam for a year during the mid-60s, but he said soldiers claimed to have heard him well into the 70s because his successors continued to use those three words. Adrian Cronauer was 79. Peter King, CBS News.
Coming up, welcoming home the nation's T-Rex.
It's getting kind of a spa treatment up there.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy.
Do you think it would be wise for the president to sit down for an interview with Robert Mueller?
I do. Democratic National Committee Chair Tom Perez.
This president has absolutely no moral compass.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The Girl Scouts are preparing kids for the future with new badges.
Many of the 30 new badges focus on STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and math. There's a cybersecurity badge.
Cybersecurity is a job that we are, as a nation, really underrepresented in. We have a lot of open jobs, and so cybersecurity is a great thing to introduce our girls as they go into the 21st century with these new skills.
Dr. Laura Terrell with the Girl Scouts says the new badges also include space exploration, robotics, and mechanical engineering. Chris Summer for CBS News, Dallas.
A famous longtime resident of the Smithsonian's Natural History Museum in Washington is returning to their old stomping grounds, the nation's T-Rex. Siobhan Stars is a project manager at the museum who's overseeing the move. Where has the T-Rex been?
The T-Rex has been up outside Toronto in Canada as it's getting kind of a spa treatment up there. They've been cleaning, preparing, and reposing and mounting the specimen. And we're so excited to welcome it back home.
It's coming home because it will be the centerpiece of this new multi-million dollar fossil exhibit that opens in June. Tell me about that.
It is, yeah. It is literally in the heart of the gallery, and the rest of time and the exhibit kind of spins out around it. And at least 6 million visitors a year will come in and stand kind of in awe and wonder in front of this amazing specimen. It's mounted and reposed in a new way, so it's kind of chomping down on a Triceratops specimen, which itself is also iconic to the museum. It's our specimen that we've named Hatcher. And was in the old hall, and we've repositioned it under the feet of the T-Rex in a dramatic new pose together.
Why these new poses?
So a bunch of reasons. All of the fossils in the old hall date from at least 1980, and many of them are as old as all the way back as 1923. And science has really changed and evolved since 1923. So things like how wide their stance would have been, how they would have carried their weight, all of the scientific details for how they lived, how they moved, how they functioned has really been updated since then. And then another thing was we really wanted to try to capture all of them in a really exciting moment in life to bring them alive to the visitor, especially young kids, to give them a sense of how these organisms lived and ate and the also the worlds that they lived in. So we're really excited to show that to our visitors.
How different is this new fossil hall going to be from the one that many of us remember going to as a kid?
It is all brand new. It is completely different. You will not recognize really much of anything from the old hall. The whole space has been renovated. The skylight above was opened up, so now we have natural light flooding the main atrium. The windows have been opened. It really just completely looks all new.
What about the educational part of it? How much is devoted to what new we've learned about dinosaurs and fossils since this original hall first opened?
So I think that's one of the most exciting things about the new exhibition is that not only does it have brand new fossils, not only does it span well more than dinosaurs, this isn't just a dinosaur hall. Dinosaurs are kind of the tip of the iceberg. It's all of life, 3.7 billion years of life on Earth. And then on top of that, it's all of the best science education, informal education strategies and techniques that we deploy in museums in 2019, which is really exciting. We've also built into this space a hands-on learning center. So visitors who've come to the museum will be familiar with a center that we call Curious, which is our hands-on learning center, primarily for middle school kids. It's on the ground floor of the building. And what we've done is we've infused that hands-on space and the learnings and best practices of it up into the hall. So they'll actually be able to handle fossils and replicas and look in microscopes and talk with scientists and educators about paleontology and deep time and what that means to their lives today. So it's a really exciting opportunity that we didn't have in the old hall.
A new way to look at the past. Smithsonian Natural History Museum's Siobhan Starrs on the Weekend Roundup. Great talking with you.
Thanks, Steve.
Now to a different kind of relic, Blockbuster. Two of the iconic chain's last stores in Alaska have shut down, leaving just one in the U.S. in the Pacific Northwest.
Awesome.
Nobody has the movie I want.
In its heyday, there were 9,000 Blockbuster stores worldwide, a new one opening every 17 hours.
Oh!
The video store found its place in pop culture.
The Other Side of Darkness. Huh, I never heard of that one.
Yeah, it went straight to video.
And became the place to be.
I want to rent Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
For families, for date night, for just hanging out. Then came streaming.
Time to finally return your father's overdue movies.
And as fast as Blockbuster had grown, the stores just as quickly vanished.
Is it kind of sad that Blockbuster is no more?
It's really sad because it was a fun family outing.
But this is not a relic. Call it retro cool.
I wish I could have grown up in the 80s and
It's a piece of history that I never got to experience.
Just coming here is kind of like nostalgic to me.
It's nostalgic to you?
Yes. Yeah.
And how old are you?
I'm 15.
Little has changed inside, and that's the way customers like it. They could stream at home, but browsing DVDs gives them a sense of community.
And that's something that's lost right now in our generation that we're raising. They don't like the interaction face-to-face stuff. And I think you still get that coming here.
Store manager Sandy Harding works alongside her 17-year-old son, Ryan.
When you found out you were going to be the last Blockbuster store, and it was in Bend, Oregon, what struck you?
The amount of phone calls is nuts.
Smile.
It's awesome. It really is. It changes the whole energy around here. It makes it cool. It's like, yeah, I get to go to work at Blockbuster.
And now, in making a last stand, those in this northwest town may be writing Blockbuster a Hollywood ending.
Thank you.
Jamie Ukas, CBS News, Bend, Oregon.
Finally this weekend, a milestone moment for Billy Joel in New York Wednesday.
He played his 100th show at Madison Square Garden. Bruce Springsteen showed up to join in on two songs. Fans loved every minute.
It's an event. I mean, this is a lifetime event for him and for us.
Oh, it's an electric moment. I didn't even know it was the 100th show until we got here, but I'm ecstatic about it for sure.
Billy Joel's been an artist in residence at the Garden, performing monthly for the past few years. Steve Kathan, CBS News, New York.
That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Jake Rosen is the intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.